I'm Rick Katchke.
Hi, I'm Drew Steck.
And this is the Internet's Maximum Potential. And that was the one, the only,
Robert Palmer
with Simply Irresistible. Catching up from last week's show, I'd like to say that I watched So You Think You Can Dance, and I will say that I watched So You Think You Can Dance, which did feature Flippy the Hat.
Flippy the Hat.
Here's the thing that amazed me. Now, Drew, you watched the program as well,
yes,
correct?
I did. I watched the...
Here's what blew my mind. Flippy the Hat was a fantastic dancer.
He was actually a great dancer. He actually did some cool stuff with the hat.
The hat was a vital part of his routine. He had wonderful control of the hat, just making it go up and down his arm, on top of his head.
Yeah.
Just really phenomenal.
And then the take they used wasn't actually him doing the...
Yeah, they must have shot a different happy dance for him, because it was him coming out of sort of a generic... backstage door, more towards a green room, as opposed to running out of the theater, which is what I saw. And he wasn't flipping the hat. So I was just saying that that moniker will never be applied to him, unless people think, oh, well, he flipped the hat and up and down his arm.
Yeah, but I think that also people might now think that you're a liar.
No, it happened.
You don't have photo evidence. So.
I just in my gut, something was telling me that there would be a guy who would flip his hat.
And in no way did I see any intro with your car on the side of the Milwaukee Theater. So I was looking for it. I was looking hard for it, and I just didn't see anything.
But after his performance, it went from me sort of laughing about him to actually pulling for him.
No, I actually hope he makes it like through Vegas, and then
I got
you
some
know.
News, Drew.
Yeah.
The next night, that Wednesday night, they had the episode where they whittled down the 200 dancers to just 20, the
okay.
top 20. And then the series is going to go on with the remaining 20. Mm-hmm. He made it to the final 39.
Oh.
He made it to the very last round and was cut. So Flippy the Hat, very short-lived reign.
Did anybody from Milwaukee make it into the final 20?
You know, that was the thing that I was sort of frustrated with the show, is that they do these profile pieces on many of the dancers that you meet.
Yeah.
And several of the ones that made it in the top 20, they didn't do a profile on it at all.
They didn't have any profile, yeah.
And then it came down to like one where they'd been really profiling this guy since the first episode, and this other completely unknown guy, and they went with the unknown guy, where it's sort of like... You know, the producers should probably intervene here.
Have some sort of influence over the choices that are made by the judges.
Why would you spend so much time?
Not to say, you know, they should choose one of the lesser talented characters over one of the more talented characters, but the producers should know, like, going into it, saying, this is a pretty sure bet that this guy's going to make it to the top 20, so we should spend this time profiling him. You know, Andy has an interesting story. As opposed to, you know, them just being like, well, we've been profiling this guy since the beginning. Everybody's polling for him. And we're just going to let down the audience and go with 20 people that no one knows, which is, you know, it's bad television in the sense that, you know, viewers aren't pulling for the characters as much.
And the thing is, these aren't characters, these are real people. Their dancing personalities might make them a character, Drew, but they're real.
That's not the way I watch the show, Rick.
You just pretended they were fictional.
I pretend that they're fictional characters and that it's scripted, and it makes it much more interesting, I think.
There's much more drama that way.
Way more drama.
Also, updating last week, I did see the Onion movie.
I saw the trailer for it, so now I know what this is.
So we've essentially seen the same thing. It's about 80 minutes long. Maybe 10 to 15 minutes of it works. It's a very, very sloppy movie.
You know what it reminded me a lot of, just watching the trailer? It looks a lot like, you can tell me more about this. Is it a lot like a Kentucky Fried Movie?
You know, Kentucky Fried Movie is obviously an influence on it.
Just with the whole, like, newscasting bit and that whole sort of thing.
Well, the news, it's not that the newscasters are watching a teenage couple having sex at the end of the film. That's not the premise of the, that's not the big reveal. But yeah, I mean, obviously, with the Onion news, it makes sense that it's based around a newscast. But then it sort of illogically springs off where it might be people watching it, or it might just be, have nothing to do with the newscast. I thought it was mainly derivative of sort of, have you seen Amazon Women on the Moon?
Yes, I actually have seen that.
And also Mr. Show, the Globochem conglomerate with where they got the mascot and everything, it was sort of overtaking the news. I will give a lot of credit, though, Steven Seagal.
I did see that he makes an appearance. They really played that up in the trailer.
Steven Seagal is excellent in the movie because he plays... He's in a film that they have a trailer for, and it's sort of a running gag throughout the movie called Cock Puncher.
Yes.
And it's a weak gag, but Steven Seagal commits to it so perfectly, and he delivers his lines with such sincerity that I really appreciate the effort that he put into it.
I legitimately laughed at that part of the trailer just because of the fact that, you know, he was so sincere about it, so just like committing to it like it would be one of his films that he actually, you know, the old Steven Seagal movies. But yeah, no, he, I'm sure that, I now have to watch it maybe just for that.
Just for that? I mean, I wouldn't necessarily say it's an awful film, but it's not exactly The Onion quality. The Onion's a very funny newspaper.
Oh, every issue, you know, at least has three or four things that make me laugh out loud, you know, and everything else is pretty humorous as well.
Also, following up from last week, I did see Semi-Pro.
I saw that a while back.
You know, I don't know. I really, really like Andy Daly. And yeah. There are some really funny bits in it. Tim Meadows is pretty funny.
Tim Meadows is really funny.
And but Andy Daly, I'm worried about him because if you've seen the ASCAT DVD, the Upright Citizens Brigade Theater, he is such a versatile performer, and he is so funny. I'm fearing that he's going to be this generation's Rick Moranis, where instead of being able to show off his wide range of comedic talent, he's going to be typecast as the geeky
straight
nerd.
Guy. Yeah.
Yeah. In Semi-Pro, he's the sort of straight announcer who has, you know, strange comments every now and then.
Yeah.
And also on The Office, he was when they had a stripper for the men, he was the Benjamin Franklin that was hired for the women. I'm just really worried that he's not going to be able to show off how talented he is. Because if you watch SCTV, with that great cast that they had, Rick Moranis is
and
really the one.
You know, his characters in Strange Brew, you know, if you ever saw the film Strange Brew, which is a takeoff of Doug and Bob?
It's Bob and Doug McKenzie.
Bob and Doug McKenzie.
Before you see Strange Brew, which I actually feel is a bit of a letdown.
Compared to the characters, yeah.
On the show, get their album, Bob and Doug McKenzie, Great White North. That album, I found it in my basement at home, and when I was in fifth or sixth grade, I put it on, and it is one of the finest comedy albums.
Bob and Doug McKenzie are two of my favorite, you know, comedic characters of all time, actually. And, but yeah, no, I just think anything they do is pretty hilarious. But yeah, they're
the Great White North. Have you heard Great White North?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's tremendous. They get, Geddy Lee from Rush, and they have a song called Great White North, and, Geddy Lee is just, he's amazing at it, because he's very similar to sort of Steven Seagal, where he
totally goes into it, and it's just wonderful. So, I'll say you can throw that out there as your album pick of the week early on.
I'm gonna throw it early. Today, my pick of the week is Bob and Doug McKenzie, Great White North. They didn't release any other albums. It's just this sort of a magnificent solo single.
Solo shot, yeah. Well, they had a lot of other characters too, you know, Dave Thomas and Rick Moranis, so I don't think they wanted to play into that way too much.
I'm glad that they didn't. It's a really perfect little gem. How was your week, Drew?
My week was pretty good. I did, however, watch finally a week after it aired, the MTV Movie Awards. What do I have to say about them? Mike Myers hosted. I feel like he did a really, you know, good job. I feel like he actually, like, his comedy level was like above the audience base in the sense that like. They didn't get half of the comedy of what he was, like, doing. He had a couple funny new characters. You know, one was, like, this really weird animal trainer guy that was pretty funny. And then I have to say the highlight of the entire show was when him and Dana Carvey reincarnated Wayne's World on the set and did a 2008 version of Wayne's World where they're still the same. They're still in his basement. It's still Aurora, Illinois. But to see them, you know, play to a large audience, and they did the top 10 2008 porno films based on Hollywood blockbusters, and they had some good ones in there. Horton Hears a Ho, stuff like that. And it was pretty funny.
Here's a good question, Drew. Did Alice Cooper show up? And did they say, "Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Alice Cooper"?
And then he showed up, and he was like, "I was in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, and I got this latte."
He told that anecdote.
No, he did not. It would have made it the greatest movie awards of all time if he had.
But just complete silence on the part of the audience as Alice Cooper tells this very mundane anecdote.
Yeah. So, but another thing, during, you would know this better than I have. I would, because I haven't looked into it that much. I would love to see the film, but they introduced Will Ferrell and Danny McBride together to show off the Best Fight Award, obviously as a plug for Foot Fist Way. But they said, from Foot Fist Way, Will Ferrell and Danny McBride. But Will Ferrell's not in
Foot
Fist Way.
He's
the executive producer of Foot Fist Way, or the distribution producer.
Yeah.
Along with
the movie
Adam
was
McKay.
Done.
Was done 2 years before they even got their hands on it.
Yeah.
They love the movie. Him and Adam McKay do. And so they're producing, they're distributing it under their Gary Sanchez Productions, which has done Anchorman and, you know, all the Will Ferrell movies. But he's not in the film.
I did see Foot Fist Way. I actually did go see it.
Okay.
It's playing in Madison. I went out with my dear close friends, Tom and Fawn. We drove out there.
Fawn Simpson,
yes.
Okay.
Yes. There's a running gag in all of our films that characters feature the last name Simpson. I didn't put that in the new script.
Didn't put that in new.
Oh my god!
We're working on a film this summer that's going to be about feature length. About 120 minutes, or about an hour and 20 minutes. And I'm holding it right now, and I just realized as we were talking about this that we have not worked it into the new script. Never fear, though; it will be in
there.
Yeah,
this isn't the final
draft. It was just an oversight.
This is a 75-page. Hammer it out. Let's build on that.
Let's build on that. Just the skeleton of the script. But I just think it's kind of funny.
I don't want to have to shoehorn
it was a
the
small
name
oversight.
In there.
Yeah.
But it will be there.
It'll be there.
Anyhow, we went out. We saw Foot Fist Way. And I'm surprised at how negative a reaction it's getting from most critics. It's very mixed. A lot of people love it. A lot of people hate it. And a lot of people are confused by it. I think that...
You could say that Ferrell's the same way, though.
that he loves it, he hates it, and he's confused by it.
But I'm just saying, Ferrell's comedy and critics, you know, some people appraise him and some people think he's just a complete dumbass.
But it's a different brand of comedy.
Oh, it's a different brand of comedy, but I'm just saying, in the critics' eyes, it's a similar reaction.
Like, a lot of people, a lot of the critics seem to want to compare it to Napoleon Dynamite, which I guess you can make some comparisons, but it's really, if you've seen The British Office, and you've seen the entire run of The British Office, this is sort of the David Brent, Ricky Gervais character. It's a perfect American version of him. The American Office is pretty funny. I was very reluctant to come around to it, but it's good. But it doesn't capture how uncomfortable it needs to be, or how uncomfortable the British series was.
Yeah,
and this
I think it Americanizes it in the sense that it doesn't... I think Brits are able to take things way farther, you know, in their comedy and still find it funny on a broad scale, whereas I feel like Americans, and this is just cultural, and it has nothing, it's not better or worse, it's just Americans.
Are you calling out America, Drew?
I'm calling out American comedy. I'm just saying that Americans, sometimes people will take it farther and people won't find it as funny, you know, like the uncomfortableness. Like, I could sit through a really uncomfortable scene and find it really funny, but a lot of Americans, a lot of, you know, teenage girls who find The Office hilarious... are like, haha, that's funny, that's awkward.
They watch it because of a Pam and Jim.
But, you know, they'll laugh at the Michael Scott character and be like, ah, that's funny, that's awkward. But if it was any more awkward than that, I think it'd make them uncomfortable. Whereas, like, The British Office is way more uncomfortable than that.
Well, The British Office, the first season, I guess it's kind of similar to The American Office. It's uncomfortable, but it never goes too far. Second season of British Office... there's very little comedy in that. It's just so miserable. But it's kind of wonderful at the same time. But so, I don't know. I think you just have to go into it knowing that there's going to be some really uncomfortable stretches. If you like The British Office, definitely check out The Foot Fist Way. So.
Yeah, no, I want to see it, and it sounds great, so. I saw last week, You Don't Mess with the Zohan.
Oh, really?
Starring Adam Sandler, about a Mossad agent, the greatest Mossad agent in Israel, which is the Israeli CIA, if you don't know what Mossad is. And he decides to quit killing and fighting because he's sick of the fighting and wants to go to New York and become a hairdresser.
How was it, Drew?
For a Sandler film, it was actually well-cultured, you know, and had a... It made me
laugh.
It
was very refined.
It was... No, it was... I like the fact that it wasn't, you know... Some Sandler films are a little too pop culture-y, I'll say. But I like the fact that this one really played up, like, the Israeli-Palestinian culture, the, you know, disco-teca type of thing. You know, they're really, oh, disco-disco. Like, they disco, they play hacky-sack.
They just keep saying disco-disco.
Disco-disco. It's really, a lot of the film is them saying disco-disco. He eats tons of just hummus and, It's a really funny character, Zohan, and I highly enjoyed it and thought it was pretty funny, and also had a good message of global unity. You know, that it's just really this one issue that they really separate themselves on, even though they're a very similar culture. But yeah, it was fun. It's a fun movie. You really don't have to think that much, and you'll really enjoy it. John Turturro is ridiculous in it, which is always great. So, and everybody kind of makes their... Everybody in the Sandler universe kind of makes their spotlight.
The Wedding Singer shows up. Happy Gilmore shows up.
Well, that, you know, what I'm talking about, you know, his key players. His buddies.
His repertoire.
Yeah, exactly. His repertoire Sandler guys. Chris Rock also makes a short appearance as a Jamaican cabman, which is... He's a Jamaican cabbie.
Okay.
And he's pretty funny. Literally, he's on screen for about 2.5 minutes, but he's pretty funny.
Excellent. Now, I'm sure many of our listeners are wondering, hey, I thought that there were going to be guests on this show. We have some guests lined up, but not for this show, not for episode 4. We will be recording another show today with some guests.
Literally, once we finish this, we're going to get in cars and drive to them.
Note plural cars, because we don't believe in carpooling.
No.
We saw the film with Tom Arnold Carpool, and it just completely changed our opinion of carpooling in general. We don't want to go through a mall with a car and risk hurting people, so we're taking separate cars.
That and the ABC series, Carpoolers, with... O'Connell,
Jerry O'Connell.
Jerry O'Connell, and a couple other guys, and we just really didn't want to, just the really ditzy sitcom, you know, version of that, we just didn't like it, and decided, you know, we're never going to carpool.
We also don't like Jerry O'Connell because he used to be a very fat young boy, if you've seen Stand By Me. Anyhow, the reason why it's just Drew and I for this show is we felt... Not necessarily we needed this, but we figure you, the audience, needs...
You need some warming up.
Like a
you
bridge.
A little bit of foreplay for the guests to come along.
And also a memoriam for this format of the show. Drew and I are going to have guests, and...
We've got some good guests lined up, some really fun people to talk to, some really fun people to add to a group dynamic on the show.
And we probably will still do the one-on-one
action. You know, every once in a while, now and then.
But before we go take that leap, we want to sort of hold your hand and whisper thank you into your ear and say it in that weird tone. Thank you.
This makes you feel really uncomfortable as Americans, the not understanding that we're using British humor is pretty much what we want to do. You know, so thank you.
Thank you. So, like I said, we'll have some guests next show.
That reminds me, like, the end of Hook, when Robin Williams, like, hands the fat black kid the sword, and he's like, you're the new Peter Pan, and then he flies off into the distance, and he's like, and then the one curly-haired, you know, freckled redhead kid is like, that was a great game. And then you hear from the clouds, you just hear, thanks for playing.
I haven't seen Hook in forever.
Maybe the creepiest
that.
Part of Hook. I watched it about 2 weeks ago. It's a great movie. Bangarang, Rufio, I love it all. You know,
Invisible hamburgers.
I appreciate it now way more than I did when I was a child, actually. Just the depth of detail that Spielberg goes into in this little Peter Pan universe is great, you know? And this little thing that he creates. He didn't create it. J. M. Barrie did create it. But see the other film, Finding Neverland, about creating Peter Pan.
That's how you knew that was the author. Is that... Am I going out on a limb?
I was going to say the Johnny Depp crit. No.
I don't even remember that author's name.
I did children's theater, so it's kind of pretty popularized there. But I'm just saying, there's way too many films made about Peter Pan, and this one's kind of a special one. I enjoy Hook.
Right now, we're recording once again from the lake house. We're on the man-made lake here, Drew, and all I can think about are the storms from this past weekend. How did you survive? In case you're not listening in the Milwaukee, Wisconsin area, Wisconsin more in general, I should say, we were just pummeled with rain.
Ravaged.
And there were eight tornadoes on Saturday.
We stepped into a back alley of pressure and were, you know, weather raped, pretty much.
That's a very... ugly image.
Isn't that just a terrible image?
Yeah, that...
I was trying to find a way to bridge that, and that's the way I went.
Okay, how did you do with the weather, Drew?
It scared me a little bit. I was driving down, and it was like last Saturday night, and it was just when the storms were really kicking up and getting bad. And there had just been a tornado warning, and then the tornado kind of passed by us. And I was going down to Marquette for the evening, and we were going to go downtown out to the bars. And I was like, oh, I'll be fine. The rain's going to probably die down. And it was just, like, the longest 20 minutes of my life on the freeway, just, like, not being able to see, like, 10 feet in front of my car and just, like, driving through what I felt like was a lake on the freeway. Like, the entire freeway was just a lake of standing water and, you know, rain. It was just intense.
But the house with the lake here...
How is it okay?
Yeah, was there any flooding? Or?
Well, since we live so close... This lake is really close to Lake Michigan. Literally, like, a quarter of a mile or so to Lake Michigan. Just, like, right over there. Right over those trees. I'm pointing to Rick. Not to the people at home.
Visualize trees. Picture a lake beyond those trees.
Lake Michigan's just right there. So the runoff, you know, wasn't too bad. But if you can... I was going to say if you can see... But just
picture
like,
the lake. Picture Drew pointing at it.
It's about a half a foot higher than it was when the rain began.
Picture the water a half a foot higher.
So it's definitely raised a little bit. But the house is up a little bit from the lake. So we were worried for a little bit, but at the same time, it wasn't as big of a problem as I thought it might be. I thought it might be some big problem,
but it wasn't.
It was not.
Excellent.
No. The river, the Milwaukee, people living along the Milwaukee River are having way more trouble, though. That's flooded really bad.
Anything else exciting happened to you during this past week, Drew? Any monumental things of note?
I don't remember. Did I say I was going to talk about something that I forgot to talk about?
I can't recall.
Okay. No, I can't really think of anything too much. To mention.
Well, this has been the internet's personal potential.
No. How about you, Rick? Do you have anything else that you want to add to this episode 4?
Well, we're not wrapping it up now. But lately, on Sunday night, I watched this film called Rolling Thunder. Have you heard of this?
No.
It's from the 70s.
No, I don't think I
have. Basically, it was a movie that inspired... It's one of Quentin Tarantino's favorite films. He named one of his distribution companies Rolling Thunder Pictures. It stars William Devane and Tommy Lee Jones. It's from the 70s. It was written by Paul Schrader, who wrote Taxi Driver.
Okay.
And just one of the most, like, epically depressing, like, just what the main character
goes
through.
Is it so similar to, you know, Taxi Driver, where it's just like...
It has some similarities to Taxi Driver, but you can really see the influence that it had on Kill Bill, where William Devane was a prisoner of war during Vietnam, and he comes back, and he's been a prisoner of war. He's been captured for 7 years.
Oh, yeah.
And comes back, and his wife is there, and he sees a son who his son doesn't know him, because when he left, his son was just a new... He was, like, 1 year old,
yeah, yeah.
So he doesn't remember him. His wife has fallen in love with another man. He's awarded 2,100 silver dollars commemorating each day that he was held captive. Then, some guys break into his house, hold him a captive, and want the silver dollars. But he's been through so much, he's not about to give up the money. So instead, he lets them torture him. And, like, they put his hand in a garbage disposal.
Oh, God.
Destroy it. His wife and kids show up, and they're holding them captive. The kid shows them where the silver dollars are. They get the money, decide to shoot and kill the wife and kid, and then shoot him. And he's able to survive. He loses his hand. He gets a hook for it. You know, he's got a hook now. And he comes out and he just swears his revenge and, like, goes to Mexico to kill all of these guys.
Oh, my gosh.
And it's just ridiculous, though, the length at which they go to make it a revenge picture.
Yeah,
just,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
Just, what? You would think that the one beacon of happiness would somehow happen.
Well, like, his wife didn't have to be in love with another man, like...
But that part makes sense, because there was a guy that was sort of taking care of them while they were gone.
Yeah, I can see that, but maybe it also leads him to a point where it's like he had nothing left, and then they took the little tiny bit.
They took those silver dollars!
Which is pretty much all he had left in terms of, like,
yeah,
happiness, or, like, well, he lost his wife, his kid really doesn't even know him, you know? What does he have in this world? He has those silver dollars that were awarded to him, and that's just not even, like... as a money issue or, like, a thing issue. It's just, like, something to represent what he did,
yeah,
for the country. And then, you know, have that taken from him.
Yeah, it was... I mean, it's good, but it's very, like... You have to be prepared to watch
prepared
it.
To be just absolutely depressed by the end of it.
And Tommy Lee Jones is phenomenal in it.
Does
lately,
he play one of the captors?
No. He's this guy's best friend. And, the guy, he shows up at Tommy Lee's house and is like, I found where these guys are. And Tommy Lee Jones, just very quiet, I'll go get my gear. And, like, oh, man, Tommy Lee Jones is just a total badass in it. He's there in the beginning of the film, and then he doesn't come in until, like, the final, like, 20
minutes.
And he gets, like, awesome line after awesome line, yeah.
Not so much, like, old country for old men, no country for old men Tommy Lee Jones, but more like... Batman Forever, Tommy Lee Jones.
No. I mean, it's more No Country for Old Men. I mean, I thought he was pretty tough and rugged individual.
Does this take place in Mexico as well, or in Texas as well?
It takes place in Texas and Mexico.
Okay.
Yes. And they basically the last scene is at this this prostitute, this what the people would call a whorehouse,
a brothel.
Yes, you know the non...
True, you know prostitution.
Drew, you're familiar with brothels?
You're familiar with prostitution
with bordellos.
And whorehouses?
Yeah, it takes place at a brothel where Tommy Lee Jones goes in and, all the bad guys are in there, and so Tommy Lee Jones goes in to sort of be a plant. Like, he gets a prostitute, and they're in the room, and he's waiting for William Devane to give him a signal for them to, like, launch this, like, a Trojan horse attack.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And so Devane gives a signal, and Tommy Lee Jones is with this naked woman. And all of a sudden, she's been performing on him. He's been putting together this shotgun. And so he starts getting his gear up and everything. She's like, what the are you doing? I'm going to go shoot some people. Or I'm going to go kill some people. And it's amazing. Just this brutal shootout.
We'll have to say Rick recommends Rolling Thunder, but
be prepared.
Just a ridiculous amount of depression and
badassery.
Badassery. You just need to be prepared for it. So that sounds fun. I'd say my DVD pick of the week would be Hook. Just go, watch Hook again, appreciate it, because I know you've watched it at least once. Anyone, you know, who is born, I think, in our era has watched Hook at least once.
I did see it in the theaters.
Everyone's pretty much grown up with it. I remember I had the Rufio toy from McDonald's for the longest time.
Better that than a roofie toy.
And I also had a nice, like, they were all like water squirter toys. Like, you fill them with water and then you squirt them. So
excellent.
I love those. Hook was a standard in my, it was a classic in my house.
This past week, I've also, my girlfriend and I are going to New York on July 5th.
Are you gonna watch Sex and the City while you're there too?
We are going on the Sex and the City tour. We are hitting 40 hot, you just slapped your forehead. We are hitting some of the many hot spots of the show. Looking forward to the Magnolia Bakery, which was featured in the Lazy Sunday.
It's also Lazy Sunday video. Yeah, no, it's a very popular bakery in New York as well.
We're gonna hit there. It's gonna be fantastic. We've got our tickets for some Broadway shows. We've got our city pass. This is, honest to God, the first vacation that I've really planned, or it's the first one we're going on where it's just her and I.
Oh, wow.
And, like, I've done a few little trips the past few years. I went to California earlier this year, but that was literally for a day. And I also went to Austin last year for 2 days, and that was also Joe Dante related. So there really wasn't much exploring the city beyond me walking around those times. Now,
you get to explore it?
Yes. I've been to New York before, but we are doing pretty much brand new things that I haven't had a chance to do. We're going to the Empire State Building. I'm really excited about this vacation. Have you been to New York, Drew?
Yes.
As you basically telling the story.
Well, Rick was talking about Sex and the City. I just kept keeping myself
interested. It was while I was talking about the city of New York, what we're going to do. You decided to put a plastic cup up to your face and suck on it. Until it became the suction form, and you could pull it off and make a popping noise. That's how entertaining that segment was, apparently.
So, I was just expressing the listeners' thoughts at home. No. No. It actually sounds like a really fun tour. New York is a great city, and it's fun to explore. I'm actually going to go there next summer, maybe for maybe a month or so, on an internship with my... My dad's company has a creative division, and the guy there who runs the creative division is actually, his weekend job is that he's a cameraman for SNL.
Oh, really?
So he's a really cool guy and just a really nice guy. So I was going to go out there for a month and hang out in New York and do some creative internship out there.
During the summer, pretend that you're filming SNL?
Pretend that I'm just show up and just like sit there on a camera and just, it'll you be see- like...
Sorry, go ahead.
I'm just going to put inserts. Like, if you ever watched the old 1975 SNL, like, where they film the audience in between takes, and they put, like, name cards up, like not Barbara Bush. Like, they were so not funny that they were funny. Or, like, this man doesn't know what that smell is. And then they'll, like, laugh at it or something. So, it's something similar to what...
you want to bring that back to SNL? That's where you're going to pitch this summer?
Yeah.
So, next summer, I should say.
Yeah, I want to bring back the 1975 format. Maybe multiple monologues, stuff like that. You know.
Have you seen a Broadway musical before on Broadway?
I've never seen a Broadway musical on Broadway. Unfortunately, the time I was there, we weren't able to get into Beauty and the Beast. I think.
Okay, I saw when I was with my family. We saw Annie Get Your Gun with Bernadette Peters and Tom Wopat. When Lee and I go, we're not seeing one, but two Broadway shows.
Uh-oh, what are you seeing?
We are seeing Boeing. It's a play. It features Bradley Whitford, Christine Baranski, Gina Gershon.
Bradley Whitford of?
Of West Wing and Studio 60 on the Sunset Strip, one of your favorite
shows. Nobody watched that show besides me, or else it'd still be on the air.
But yeah, I'm really excited. Mainly to see Gina Gershon in a play.
Yeah!
I was really shocked by that cast.
Whitford's also from Wisconsin.
Yeah, he's married to Jane Kaczmarek.
Who's also from Wisconsin. And they have a strange love child, Tony Shalhoub, who's also from Wisconsin. Anyway.
But we're seeing
Gina Gershon.
We're seeing Boeing, and it should be a lot of fun. Main reason what we're seeing it was there were rumors that Sarah Jessica Parker was going to be joining the cast, but it turns out that it's just... You have to understand, Drew. The majority of the choices that we make will be Sex and the City related for the rest of our lives.
I just think it's hilarious that it's like, your commitment to it like it's now a religion. Like, Sarah Jessica Parker might be in it. She's not in
She's
it.
She's not, no, 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 she's not in it, but she highly recommends it.
She highly recommends it, and she might be in it. She might somehow be around it. She might be in the audience, so we have to go.
No, but, yeah.
You might as well go see, like, a Broderick play just because he's her husband.
He's not in a play. If Broderick was in a play, we'd see it. I've seen Broderick in a play. I saw him in The Producers.
Really?
Yeah, I saw The Producers.
I saw when it was Alexander and Short.
Oh, when it was out in Los Angeles?
Yeah, out in L.A.
Yeah, I saw it with Lane and Broderick in Chicago before it went to Broadway.
It did its test run.
Yeah.
A lot of shows, before they go to Broadway, they'll do a test run. Typically in Chicago, or some plays have actually done it in San Diego. Dirty Rotten Scoundrels did it in San Diego, and Jersey Boys originated in San Diego. But Chicago
is... It's a good way of sort of figuring out what the audience likes, what works.
Amping it up before you take it to that high rent, high expectation area of Broadway. You know?
There was a number in The Producers, I remember, they cut... That was there when we saw it. I can't remember obviously how it went, but I know that there was a song missing.
Oh really?
When we saw, yeah. What you know?
And from the film, subsequently from the film as
well.
Yeah.
The film also is missing the song, "The Alley Stock, the King of Old." I used to be the king of.
Yeah, 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 yeah. Really,
which I they have it in the deleted scenes, if I'm not mistaken. But that is one of those songs that. Really should have been in the movie if you're not familiar with the characters.
Yeah, it really doesn't... His character's, like, there, but it's, like, there's a lot that you have to inference about the Bialystock character.
Yeah, that, really. Like, that's just a perfect introduction to him. And it's like, the second number of the musical. They cut it.
It's gone. Yeah, it's a very introductory number to, like, introduce him, introduce, you know, where he's come from, and, yeah, it's cut. So, another play that did that was Spamalot, did that as well in Chicago. They did a very, like, promoted run in Chicago.
Did you see, did you see Spamalot? Have you seen it?
I have not seen it yet. I've listened to the CD, I've read the script, I love it, I think it's great, and I want to see it, but I just haven't had the opportunity.
I saw it a few weeks ago. It was in Milwaukee, and then I missed it during its Milwaukee run, but it was in Appleton, so I drove out to see Spamalot. You know, I don't know how I feel about it. I was a Monty Python and the Holy Grail nerd.
Yeah.
That movie sort of defined part of my personality when I was a kid. And I'm really not crazy about what Eric Idle is doing.
Like whoring out.
Yeah, basically the other members of Monty Python have moved on or have died. And they're doing their own thing, whereas Eric Idle is like, Let's keep making money off of this.
Let's keep whoring out, you know,
And, like, the thing that I didn't like about it was that they were incorporating, like, other Monty Python things that had nothing to do, like the song Always Look on the Bright Side of Life.
Which is from the end of the Monty Python film Life of Brian.
That's in the musical, and it's just one of those things where the context of it
is
totally part of what
different.
Makes it so funny.
To preface that, the end of The Life of Brian is... The Life of Brian is all about... it all takes place during the time of Jesus. But instead of following Jesus, it follows this other character called Brian. Brian.
it follows Magnolium composer John Brian.
He follows this other character, Brian, who, you know, kind of comes from this sketchy past. But a lot of... He kind of picks up a following, and a lot of people decide that he is the Messiah, or he's this chosen one.
Yeah.
And it's very blasphemous, but very funny. And at the end of the film, he gets crucified.
And as he's on the cross...
With a bunch of other guys on crosses.
Eric Idle turns to him and says, "Oh, it's not that bad," and sings a song called "Always Look on the Bright Side of Life."
As all these gentlemen are hanging from crosses.
Destined to die. Like, there's no chance that they're going to be saved whatsoever.
No.
So, for them to work it then into Monty Python's Spamalot, not once, but twice.
Twice, yeah.
There's a sing-along at the end of the movie.
At the end of the show. It's like, it's the curtain call.
Yeah, the curtain call. They come out and sing it again. People were loving it, but I don't know, I get frustrated because I'm a nerd.
The context of it is so different, and as I said, it's kind of almost Americanized in the sense that it's like, it's what made it so funny was that it was so such a morbid like setting for it.
Yeah.
But hey, let's look on the bright side of life and sing this cheery, happy, ditty tune as opposed to, oh, everything worked out in the end. Let's sing Always Look on the Bright Side of Life. You know?
Like, Eric Idle just lately, like, have you seen The Ruddles?
No.
The Ruddles is a mockumentary. It's basically this band that follows a very similar path to as the Beatles, but it's a very funny movie, and their songs aren't necessarily parody songs, just songs that sound like the Beatles. And the guy who wrote the music and did the songs for that was Neil Innes. And Lee and I, we actually ended up meeting Neil Innes. He came to Milwaukee, and he's just a really nice guy. I got his autograph and got to talk with him for a little bit. Did a show at the Miramar for like 50 people maybe at most, but it was just a really nice, intimate, he's a really great songwriter. But Eric Idle decided that I'll do the Ruddles too, since I'm friends with celebrities such as Tom Hanks, and basically he did this whole second documentary recycling old clips from the first film, not involving Neil Innes, who was sort of the main influence for Ruddles, not involving him at all. And just basically doing what he did with Spamalot and making a knockoff so he could try to cash in on the name of the Ruddles.
Oh.
Eric Idle.
Eric, what? Where did you go wrong?
What's going on?
Although, I could always use some more of a John.
So we're seeing Boeing Boeing, and then we're also seeing the Broadway musical version of Xanadu.
Oh.
And now... See, Lee and I both have no idea. We haven't seen either of these shows. I've seen a number from Xanadu produced on, like, I think it was one of the talk shows. You know how Broadway musicals do a number.
Go to Today or Regis and Kelly.
So we're sort of going into these shows blind, and it's really exciting. Xanadu is supposed to be a very funny,
musical. I've heard good things,
I haven't seen the original film. But I don't want to see it before I go see the musical, because I've heard that it's sort of a hokey, cheesy movie.
Yeah. It would definitely influence your, I think, you seeing the musical and taking the musical for what it is, as opposed to, you know, comparing it to the film.
Have you seen the Village People movie? That just made me think of that.
No.
Can't Stop the Music.
What is this?
Have you heard of this?
No. What is this?
Okay. Alan Ball, who was the guy that did... Grease, he was the main producer behind it. In the late 70s, he produced this movie with the Village People. It's sort of the story of how a fictionalized version of how the Village People came to be.
But starring the actual Village People.
But starring the actual Village
People. So it's kind of like creating like a backstory for these fictional characters.
Yes.
I think I actually have heard about this on like the E! True Hollywood Story of the Village People.
And it follows.
But then they have the real story of the Village People as opposed to the fictionalized.
It's the true Hollywood story featuring the storyline of Can't Stop the Music. No, it stars Steve Guttenberg as a songwriter, and it's him who creates the songs for the Village People.
So, like, creates Go West and YMCA and In the Navy and Macho Man.
Right. The only one of those songs that actually appears in the film is YMCA. Although there are allusions to Macho Man and Go West.
Those are my favorites, though.
Yeah. Go West!
Go West! Like that.
But, it's 2 hours, it's over 2 hours long. And it is just, it's amazing. The first scene of the film, Gutenberg's working at a record store, and he needs the night off, and the boss says, but we've got inventory. So Gutenberg, he quits on the spot, and then he goes, my time is now! And the next 5 minutes are the song, New York, New York, the city of highlights, the city of spotlights. All this song is playing while Steve Guttenberg roller skates around down the city. And the great thing is, they've got this stunt roller skater for portions of skating.
It's obviously not Steve Guttenberg, it's obviously the stunt roller skater.
Here's what happens. Steve Guttenberg is holding a radio in one of his hands, and when it's the stunt guy, he holds the radio up to his face. Here's the problem, though. They've got a camera on the left side, and the stunt guy holds the radio up to the right side of his face. So you can clearly see from the profile that it's not Steve Guttenberg. And
the best part is that they didn't cut that out during editing. They just kept
the
clip.
It's such a weird movie, but there's this great song from the construction worker where they approach him about, hey, would you want to come to this singing thing?
And he's working on a construction site as opposed to, like...
He's in, like, a warehouse. He's not... Actually, it's not really construction. He's in a warehouse, and...
this is a crappy fictionalized backstory.
They approach him, and he's like, singing, dancing, it's every boy's dream. And then there's this weird dissolve to him dreaming, singing the song called I Love You to Death, I Love You to Death, I Love You to Death, oh baby, where these women in these red sparkly suits are like crawling at him and like clawing at him and throwing red glitter at him. And it's like 5 minutes long. Every song in the film is like 5 minutes long. And everyone is just the most amazing thing. I watched it recently. Tom and Fawn watched it with me. I've been trying to get Tom to watch it for years.
We need to sit down and watch it again.
It is one of my favorite movies.
You and I need to sit down and watch it because it sounds incredible.
It is so... Okay, here's what happened. September 11th, 2003... There was a girl in one of my English classes at college, and we were going to hang out that night. I liked her, and I was trying to, you know, maybe sort of see if she'd like to go out with me, so we hung out. Here's how smart a guy I am. I think that the best movie to watch with her just meeting me, is Can't Stop the Music.
Rick, this is why we're good friends. It's because my first, like, real almost girlfriend I had in my freshman year of high school, hey, it's kind of into me, you know, I want to take her on a date, so we're going to go to dinner and a movie. What movie do we go see? Oh, guess what just came out? Star Wars Episode 2. So we're going to go see Star Wars Episode 2. Not quite as bad.
No, that's not anywhere near as bad, because what you need to understand about this movie is that it is homosexuality on film. It is just the, like... I hate to say it, but it's like the gayest movie ever made.
No, we're coining it right now.
No, it is.
If you find a gayer movie, let us know. But this is the gayest movie ever.
Like, the next step would be, like, I'm serious, gay pornography. It is so gay, and it's 2 hours long. And I'm thinking, hey, 2 hours, this will be a great chance. It's the sort of movie you can talk
during, because it's just so ridiculous.
But at the same time, I'm making her watch this. And so, like YMCA, for example, this movie is rated PG. It features a scene where they go into the locker room and you see profile shots of male genitalia. It is just, like, what I was thinking was just the most backwards logic ever. And so, appropriately, I cannot fully understand this. She never acknowledges me again. Like, I try to, like, start up a conversation. Just doesn't talk to me ever again.
So if you want a girl to leave you alone or never see you again, and you don't want to have to let her down or, like, take her on a date and act like a jerk, because that's what I do sometimes. I'll take her... This is a funny story. A girl likes me, I always stated that, you know, I wouldn't want to take her... I wouldn't want to just say no and not take her out. You know, I at least want to give her a shot of maybe dinner and a movie.
Yeah.
And, you know, see how, you know, at least give her a chance, you know, to prove herself. But during the course of that date, I really don't give her a chance because I'm such an asshole the entire time. Like, I won't open doors. I'll just kind of, like, open them behind me and then have it close right behind me and, like, have them left out behind me.
So you don't subscribe to the chivalry theory whatsoever.
I do with girls that I like. But with girls... girls in general, yes. But girls that, like, really like me and I don't, like, want to keep liking me or, like, make them think the date as, like, a wrong signal. Like, obviously send signals during the date that, like, I am not interested in them or, like, that the date, like, or make them just think that I'm an a-hole.
Here's the thing, Drew. I'm sorry to interrupt you.
It makes no sense.
Why would you go on these dates, then? If you don't have any interest whatsoever, why not say... No. As opposed to, yeah, we'll go out and then just be a complete jerk to these girls. I don't understand that logic.
I've never thought of it that way.
Just say no. That's what that slogan
is. I've now got a new theory, though. I'll just bring them over and we'll watch this movie, and they'll never talk to me ever again. Do that instead.
Can't Stop the Music is so great, though. Like, and that's part of what I love about Lee, because I know that if I showed her I didn't show her the whole film. I showed her the I Love You to Death sequence, and she laughed, and then she's like, I think you liked that a lot more than I did. But I know that she would watch that 2-hour film and understand that I love it because of how ridiculous it is, not because of how gay it is.
It is, and because you're relating to the gayness.
No, and
we should set up a large projection screen in the Third Ward and just play it and see if we get flocks of people that come in.
Part of why
the Third Ward is a notoriously, it's a large gay neighborhood.
They love you to death there.
City. Yeah, it's a large.
It's a lot of red glitter.
It's a notoriously gay neighborhood. That's where they have the Pride Fest area of Milwaukee, and it's. But I just think it'd be funny if we just projected it to see if people start gathering from all around to come watch it.
You've heard of the Alamo Draft House in Austin?
Yeah.
That was where that's one of the places I was when I went to Austin. I picked up their brochure that month, and I had just, I left, and a few days after that, they were showing Can't Stop the Music there with the cowboy. Oh, I was so mad that I couldn't stick around to see that with an audience, because that would have been...
Yeah.
One of the greatest screenings of my life.
That's sad. You missed out on a gold opportunity. But we'll have to watch that, definitely.
Oh, yeah. It is... oh, my God. It's such a good movie.
The gayest movie ever.
Steve Guttenberg and Bruce Jenner, the Olympic athlete, in his first...
Bruce Jenner, father of... if you're a popular culture fan or a fan of tabloids... are a fan of the show The Hills on MTV, Brody Jenner, his father.
He's also linked with Kim Kardashian. Yeah. I believe he's with her mother.
Her mother now. Yeah, no, now they are step... Brody Jenner, the son of Bruce Jenner, and subsequent, I guess, male star, love interest of Lauren Conrad, LC on The Hills. His father is now married. I think they're married to Kim Kardashian's mother.
Yeah. But
it's just messed up.
Bruce Jenner, this is after
right after the Olympics.
This is his first acting gig, and he's supposed to be like this flustered, lot of physical humor, but he's so stiff that since he's nervous, you know, that his line deliveries are all off, and like when he's doing physical humor, he's still so stiff that it just is like, what? He just falls down, and it doesn't look funny, but it is funny because of how awful it looks. Oh, the lines are so bad. It's just, and Steve Guttenberg is he's really raw. Like, Steve Guttenberg has never been a good actor. He's been serviceable at best.
Yeah.
But he is so raw. It is just an awful performance all around. Just bad performances. The Village People themselves are entertaining because they're so absurd.
So absurd? Are they so into their characters? They're so unbelievable.
They're for some reason, this woman, her neighbor is the Native American, and he's always in the Native American gear.
He's never
TV's broken.
Wearing a
T-shirt,
never wearing a T-shirt and jeans.
No, always in the headdress.
The chaps and
Yeah, and oh my God, it's the best movie. The best movie.
I just wish the DVD came and on the top of the DVD how they have quotes. It's the gayest movie ever. Yeah. The Chicago Union Tribune.
I think we've talked about Can't Stop the Music for 15 minutes.
It was worth 15 minutes on the show.
Forget my DVD. What did I have a DVD recommendation? No, forget Rolling Thunder. Forget about that. Get your butt in gear and see Can't Stop the Music.
Still see Rolling Thunder if you're not totally gay.
Hey, it could be a double feature.
Double feature.
Absolute joy to complete dark depression. Or the other way around.
It could bring you out of that deep depression by just being gayed to for 2 hours. That actually, it sounds like a great double feature. Oh, wow.
Good times.
Good times.
We have sipped back and we have relaxed on this episode.
Oh, this episode was... It was definitely... I didn't think when we hit 30 minutes. I thought we were stalling.
We were struggling.
When we hit 30 minutes, I thought we were stalling.
You get it?
Oh, you're doing a Russian thing.
Yeah.
You like Stalin, like Stalin.
Yeah.
Oh.
But cool. No, now we're Can't Stop the Music revived this show.
Because you can't stop the music. Oh.
No. Man. And Rihanna begs you to please don't stop the music.
Oh really? Is that one of her
She says songs? Please don't stop the music. Please don't stop the music.
If I'm the Village People, I'm gonna put together that lawsuit.
We said can't stop the music because you just physically cannot stop it. Oh wow!
Do you have an album recommendation for this week?
For this week, there's a lot of stuff I'm listening to, but nothing I'm really sold on. I would think
that you'd probably go with Robert Palmer's Greatest Hits.
You could. We'll just throw that out there, because that's actually what I've been listening to, is Robert Palmer's Greatest Hits.
And by Greatest Hits, we're taking away the plural hits. We're listening to his greatest hit, Simply Irresistible.
Just that, and Doctor, Give Me the News, I've Got a Bad Case of Love for You.
I forgot that he did that.
That would be the other one. So I want another one, please. But yeah, Robert Palmer, maybe throw some Bryan Adams in there for good measure.
I'm going to recommend an album called Music for the Morning After. It's all one word, by Pete Yorn. Oh. Pete Yorn was sort of a rising star back in 2001, and the album came out, a lot of hype for him. And he's released a couple of albums, but he's just never been a big hit.
No.
But his first album, Music for the Morning After, it's a really good record. Highly recommended. I saw him with Mason Jennings and Semisonic. It was a very good show.
I do like Semisonic.
Yeah, great band. Met them. Good friends with the drummer, Jake Schlichter. By good friends, I mean he knows who I am.
You gotta get...
Yeah, like, I should say this. Like, everything that I listen to musically, for the most part, has some link to Semisonic. I'm not joking. I love Trip Shakespeare, which is... two-thirds of Semisonic. It was the band that they had
before
Semisonic. And Trip Shakespeare, I think I love even more.
Than Semisonic. They got worse when they became Semisonic.
It's completely different because Semisonic is Dan Wilson. It's his band, whereas Trip Shakespeare was more Dan Wilson's brother, Matt Wilson.
Yeah.
His band. And Trip Shakespeare has more of a timeless quality to it, whereas Semisonic is much more
modern. And then Brian Wilson was their father who started the Beach Boys.
But literally, like, I've seen Dan Wilson several times because Dan Wilson now performs solo. I've seen The New Standards, which is a spinoff of Semisonic with a bass player.
Okay.
I've seen The Flops, which is Matt Wilson and the bass player. Basically everything I listen to is somehow linked to Semisonic. Or as a group that I saw open for them.
Or somehow something that was just on their MySpace page is pretty much how you musically link people to Semisonic.
Yeah, I'm a complete...
They gotta come on the show and play like Secret Smile.
You know, they're not broken up, they just haven't performed in forever. Recorded an album.
Maybe just
since
get the lead singer and just have him come on acoustically and play Secret Smile.
All right, that's our challenge. We didn't do a challenge last show. Our challenge this week: get in contact with Dan Wilson, convince him to join us on the show, and the primary factor to all of this is that the what seals the deal is he needs to perform Secret Smile.
No, I don't want him to perform.
You don't know any other songs by Semisonic.
I know other songs.
You don't want to perform anything off the new album, Free Life, as Free Life or Cry or any of the new songs.
Nope.
You don't want to listen to Fascinating New Thing by Semisonic or Closing Time.
Closing Time, maybe. No, we don't want Closing Time. I just want Secret Smile.
Just want Secret Smile. Okay.
Because nobody
If you can
it.
Get this done, listeners, do it.
So anyway, that sounds like it for the week. The Incredible Hulk comes out this week, starring Edward Norton with a short cameo by Robert Downey Jr. as Tony Stark.
That's what was leaked, the spoiler. It's widespread knowledge now, so
I don't feel bad that we're letting the people.
We're letting the people. I'm just gonna let. It's a nugget in there. It's an Easter egg.
You're like, it's a really good scene. Have you seen the film, Drew?
No. No. It's a great scene. Just because Robert Downey Jr. is in it. He's money. So, anyway. I guess that's the Internet's Maximum Potential, episode 4.
Thanks for listening to episode 4. Episode 5 is probably already posted by the time you're listening to this. Because we're going to be leaving in like 10 minutes our time to go record it.
We live in the past. They live in the future of when this is posted.
We should, let's not confuse them with time.
Anyway, I've been Drew Steck.
Oh, hey, this is a reverse order. Usually it's I've been Rakachki, I've been Drew Steck.
Then fine, we'll do it the right way.
All right. Pretend that didn't happen.
Okay.
All right. I've been Rakachki.
I've been Drew Steck.
And this has been
the Internet's Maximum potential. And it's playing.
Usually I say something at this point.
Yeah.